Hallo Malecha, gute Woche. I received a request to address the current situation. Now, I don't have anything new to say. And therefore, but as I corresponded with some of the women, and the feeling was that it would be beneficial. You know, I don't have anything new to say because it's still the same principles. Let's reiterate. Let's reiterate. Let's briefly go back to the things that we've been discussing and try to bring them home again in a briefish kind of way. And if you don't appreciate repetition, you would have been gone a long time ago anyways. You wouldn't be coming every week because, yes, we repeat. I'm not going to try to keep track of exactly what I said and how. I'm just going to try in a nutshell because this is basically what I'm doing with myself the whole time now, also. This is what we're doing in our home. And that is not really looking for new angles, but really trying to reiterate and hammer home, continue hammering home the what I was mekabel as the basic ways to approach this. The way I heard it said by one of the Chasheva Rabbanim, person who was actually a Rebbe of mine to a degree years ago, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to us now. The way he put it was, "Bisafa." He's talking to us in a language that we're not accustomed to, in a language that we're not accustomed to. Now, I know that there are women in this room who already have experience with that language. Meaning, in a general way, our generation is a more comfortable generation than in earlier times. We enjoy a lot more than they were in earlier times. And therefore, when we see Hashem showed us so much favor in the recent decades, and now he's putting us through something. Now he's putting us through something. There was the nightmare that it was back then, Simchas Torah. And as time is going on, we keep on experiencing. We're experiencing true. I'm going to put it differently. We had been experiencing tragedy. Bezus Hashem. We want to use the Koach HaPeh of the Jew to say that was up till now. But we had been experiencing tragedy, and Litzareinu, Rachmanu Litzlan, on a daily basis, hearing again, then hearing again, and then hearing again. So, I got, you know, people send me questions thinking that I have answers to. Who knows what? You know, Bezus Hashem, I would like to join the school of Bnei Anavim, but so well. One question that I got was, and here's a question that I want to address without answering it. What is the Haredi stand or the stand of the Haredi Gdolim on the thousands of Gazans being killed every year? Is the war being handled right? Okay. What did the Haredi leaders say about that? What did the Gedolim say about that? Does anybody know what the answer is? What's that? Well, basically, in other words, the answer is that they didn't. Why? Because their energies are going into what are we supposed to be doing with it, not what should others be doing. How should people who aren't asking us be handling it? That's not our concern right now. We don't want to get caught up with what is the right approach to the national picture, to this, that, because as far as we're concerned, we live in the reality that Hashem set us up with. And our question, our primary question, and this is the question that the Gedolim are addressing is how are we meant to be responding in terms of what does Hashem want from us personally, and in terms of how can we be contributing? How can we be contributing? I guess with women, it's less relevant than with men, but with men, you have to also add the point, how can we be contributing other than developing a clear opinion on the matter and offering it to anybody who wants to hear, or also those who don't want to hear? So that's really our focus. That's really our focus. And here we come back to what we've been discussing. So that's A. We want to have that perspective. Not what should, what shouldn't, but what me? What does this demand of me? What does this demand of me on the personal level in terms of how does Hashem want me to be responding in terms of my personal relationship with him? And number two is, Klal Yisrael is in an Eitzara, how can I be contributing? And here, as Mrs. Shabbat said, we have to realize that what is in our hands is the spiritual dimension of things. And this is what we're coming back to. Now, I deliberately did not say all that's in our hands is the spiritual dimension of things, because that would be like saying, well, the big things are being dealt with by others. We know, maybe could have it a little. But to appreciate, and this is really the point, this is the point that we keep hammering home to ourselves. To appreciate, this is primarily about the spiritual dimension. Let's appreciate two points. This is how that Klal Yisrael, things don't just happen to Klal Yisrael. Things don't just happen to Klal Yisrael as in, and this is really a part of it, as in, there was a mistake here, a mistake there, people that's a very big ASIC now, figuring out and identifying all the mistakes that led up to it. And when you actually start putting them all together, it turns uncanny.
But are the Haredi Gedolim on a spiritual level coming up with mistakes or the things we did wrong that caused it? In other words, on a spiritual level, you needed to be more serious, you needed to say less Lashon Hara, or whatever it is. Is there any kind of blaming on a spiritual level?
So here we're taking the question. So we're saying that we want to be focused on the spiritual dimension of things. That's what this is mainly about. And on the contrary, the material front of it and the soldiers, etc., are the ones who are leading the material side of it. But when Hashem puts Klal Yisrael through things, he's putting them through something that's meant to have material effects. So now the next question is, okay, so if we're not supposed to be looking at the material causes, we're supposed to be understanding that Hashem guided this, that Hashem is putting us through things and he is leading us towards something. He's trying to bring things out of us. Then the next question is, okay, so let's talk spiritual. What was the spiritual cause of it? Where were the mistakes? And the answer is that that also is not getting focused. Why is that not getting focused? Because, weiter, we want to talk lemaisa. We don't want to talk theory. We don't want to talk philosophy for a couple of reasons. First of all, to an extent, it's guesswork. We know the things that we need to be able, without a something like this happening, we need to be able to look at ourselves and say, where are our mistakes? We should be able to do that on a fine, sunny, or rainy morning. Just wake up in the morning and say, okay, what are my mistakes? Without anything to say, okay, what was the cause of this? That we always want to be doing. And therefore, this is what we want to be doing now also. Both. What are things that we can be mitaken? Not as, well, this is what caused it, but as in, if we improve ourselves, we'll be putting ourselves into a different place.
That's the thing. Can we prove ourselves that
That,
everybody should take upon themselves something that they enjoy and give it up? Let's say if you like coffee with cake, give up the cake. You take from yourself something, talk Lashon Hara, you better stop talking Lashon Hara. You like certain things, say I'll stop doing it. And this is, you're building yourself too, but you're feeling you're contributing, you're feeling their pain with them.
Okay. So you just packed a lot into that sentence. Let me try to break it down. You touched on quite a number of points. And you know what? Let's see. Let's actually move in that direction. Let's not worry about why. The question that's relevant to the Eved Hashem is what, right? What? What should we be doing? What should we be doing? And here we come back to our basic problem. So first of all, we're coming with the premise, and that's premise number one. The Jewish people, things don't happen to them. Hashem puts them through things for the purpose of them actively moving through them, meaning two sides of the coin. Things don't just happen to us because we are never just victims of circumstance. Hashem is guiding Klal Yisrael on a very specific path of what he wants. Okay? And therefore, any mistakes that can be identified that actually did lead up to this have to be viewed as, and sometimes you might see this, like the Gemara says, that sometimes Hashem will take people who should have been able to see this or should have been able to understand that, and he makes them not see it, and he makes them not understand it. You see that with the Toiv, and you also see it when Hashem decides that he has to move Klal Yisrael through something else. So that's number one. This is because Hashem has a plan for Klal Yisrael. But number two, and this is what's even more relevant for us, is that things don't happen to us in the sense that we don't just have things happen to us in a passive way. Anything that comes our way, be it fortune, be it misfortune, or be it just a regular day, are things that we are meant to take as challenges and move through them. Not that they happen to us, but that we take them and work with them. And this is again bringing us back to the point. This is bringing us back to the point. Things don't happen to us. Anything that Hashem sends our way is not for the purpose of for us to experience something, but for us to work with it. Whether it's a gift, whether it's chas v'shalom etzara, these are all for the purpose of, they're all, the chin-up bars you have to pull yourself up on. Basically, that's what the story of our history is. And this is where Klal Yisrael became a great nation. And that's how we want to be relating to this also. Okay, so what does that mean, lemaisa? So first of all, again, excuse me if I'm repeating myself, and excuse me if that apology itself becomes repetitive. But first of all, the understanding that an ace tzara is an ace, meaning we have different periods of time that have carry special significance. Yom Kippur carries special significance, and there are very specific places that we want to get to after we've been through Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah, Pesach, Shabbos. The same thing goes for an Eitz Tzara. An Eitz Tzara is a time that Hashem put into our history for the purpose of getting us somewhere, of us raising ourselves to a certain place, etc. So that's number one. To be and someone said to me this morning, it's like Elul never ended. It's like Elul never ended. And that's really exactly it. We're kind of being put through an ongoing Yamin Neran. An ongoing Yamin Neran, an ongoing Aseres Yemei Teshuva, with that sense of things are not regular now. Things are not regular now. For some of us, that is a very tangible point. Some of us have closer people who are actually out there. And for the people who are actually out there, it's even more of a tangible point. And we're seeing the responses. We're seeing the responses. But lemaisa, it's a call to any Ben Yisrael at this time to remain conscious of that, to remain conscious of that. And here we come back to the basics that we've been discussing. The Rambam says, and he also makes the point that we made before. An eis tzara is a call for tshuva, period. Meaning we always know, sometimes we say we don't know why Hashem does things. Even if we say we don't know why Hashem, sometimes we do know and sometimes we don't know. I mean, sometimes people make that into too much of a blanket ruling. We don't know why Hashem does things, and sometimes we do. But whatever the case is, we do know at least one of Hashem's purposes in that. And one of Hashem's purposes in that is for us to respond. I want to bring in a twist here. It's a very, very powerful point that Shlomo Brevda makes about Purim. Eretz Yisrael, and Motzei Sukkos, the stores are bringing out the Sufganiyot. So maybe it's already Purim season. I don't know if you see Hamantashen in the stores. But I'm going to bring out a point about that Shlomo Brevda makes about Purim. He says as follows. My guess is that I've said it here at least five times. But in Purim, Mordechai heard about Haman's Gezeirah. right? Hear that Haman decreed all the Jews are going to be killed. There's even a date and place. What happened then? What was the next thing that happened? I'm sorry? So if you open the Megillah, so that you tore his clothing, sackcloth and ashes. What do we hear in elementary school even before we hear that part? A Medrash that says that he approached three children, right? He approached three children, asked them, what did you learn? That's not in the Megillah. That's a Medrash. Okay? And each one told him a different pasuk of, although it might seem that bad things are happening, I'm here. So Mordechai knew that it was going to be fine. Now put the two together. The Megillah says he tore his clothing and put on sackcloth and ashes and cried a loud and bitter cry. The Medrash says he immediately got his so to speak, his report from Shemayim that everything is going to be fine. How does that add up? Maybe you'll say, well, maybe first he tore his clothing and then he met the child, so then he went home and changed and lived happily ever after. What's that?
His actions caused the to be done.
So this is where we're going. So Rav Shlomo Brevet puts it down in a very powerful way. He says, in Mordechai's mind, this wasn't about Haman. You see the whole time. You see the Megillah, right? As far as Mordechai is concerned, Haman is transparent. He's not there. He's not a factor, right? Even after the Gezeirah is in place, Mordechai is continuing to just like Haman doesn't exist. Mordechai, this was about communication with Hashem. That's all it was. If there was a Gezeirah in place, had it translated into Mordechai's ears, Hashem is saying, I want tshuva and tefillah. Why does Hashem want tshuva and tefillah? Maybe because he has very great things in mind. Meaning, the tshuva and tefillah is not a means to deal with the Gezeirah. But it's the other way around. The Gezeirah is there to prompt tshuva and tefillah. That's the difference between the material spiritual way of looking at it or the spiritual way of looking at it. Okay, I know that was a little bit confusing, but let me explain it like this. If you have the Jewish mindset, you respond to a tzara with tefillah. So what's the idea? That there's a tzara. Want to deal with the tzara, so I'm going to daven now. Tzara goes away. No, we're back to square one, right? We got what we needed to get. That is what we'll call being spiritual from a material perspective. I need to contend with this tzara. I need to get this tzara out of the way. I'm going to daven. But to contend with it from a spiritual perspective is the other way around. Why is there a tzara now? It's not that, hey, there's a tzara. How do I deal with it? The other way around. Why is there a tzara now? Hashem is saying, I want some more davening from you. So I'm going to respond with tshuva and tefillah. Why does Hashem want it? I don't know. Perhaps it's because Hashem says, I have very, very great things in store for you, but I want you to bring it out through tshuva and tefillah. I want you to raise yourself to it. Put it this way. Put it this way. Let's say Hashem says, Rabbosai, I have Mashiach ready and set. Let's just use that as an example, okay? Rabbosai, I have Mashiach ready and set, but I need a little more to make it happen. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring some Russia, some anti-Semite, to get that boost for the tshuva and tefillah that's really there in order to get Mashiach to come. Everybody following me on this? If my cheshbon is not clear, please speak up. Okay, let's.
Why that so the blanket, you know? So your way, that's the way, for sure. And the apples, it's not so simple.
No, it's not so simple.
Not the those who have.
It's not so simple at all. And we are talking about it on the conceptual level. But I'll get back to your point. I concede that. We'll get back to it. But right now, let's just acknowledge that Hashem does operate that way. Meaning, this is not the first time Klal Yisrael has been through something like this. Let's also bear in mind, this may be the time to say this, Mr. may not be the time to say this, but people are drawing parallels to the Holocaust. Probably say it doesn't begin. in terms of the individual Hamasnik compared to the individual Nazi, yes, the Hamasnik is the Nazi. In terms of the tragedy for Klal Yisrael, people get a little too caught up quickly into very broad statements. Rahman Litzan, there were terrible numbers here. In Treblinka, they were killing 15,000 a day. And there were. So let's just bear in mind that.
But it is the same in the sense that, and people haven't woken up until now, I think, to the fact that if Hamas has their way, they want to exterminate all of Jews.
Yes.
They didn't succeed to the extent of the Nazis to date, but if they had their way, they'd exterminate all Jews in Israel and then worldwide,
That's
right?
true. But right now I'm relating, I think the point that you were raising was in terms of the pain. In terms of the pain. So let's appreciate something. And this is a harder point to swallow. I was keeping a little conceptual, but you know what? If you're pulling it in this direction, let's address it in a way that, again, for us to process. For us to process. Hashem does prompt Klal Yisrael to growth through pain. This is something that has always been a part of our history.
No.
Again, it's easy to say, this is what we say time and time again. It's easy to say, but let's not run away from it because it's easy to say. Let's open ourselves up to the concept and appreciate the following. Let's appreciate the following. The Gemara says about the Dor HaMidbar, the Machlokes in the Gemara. Then actually, let me first round out the point that I was making, and then I'm going to get to this. The point that I was making was that an Eis Tzara is the time when Hashem is saying, "I want to see Klal Yisrael reach a higher level. I want to see Klal Yisrael reach a higher level. Where is it going to go from there? Hashem knows." But that's the call. That's the call. That's in terms of the response to the Eis Tzara. The other dimension of this, the other side of this, is what can we be contributing? So just in terms of what does Hashem want when he brings a tzara? What he wants is tefillah and tshuva. Those are the two big answers.
Daka,
What's that?
Daka.
Tzedakah comes under the, it's one of the things that I'm avir in Israel, Zeru. But the first two things on the list, right? That's how the Rambam puts it down. Tefillah and tshuva. That's the way to respond to a tzara. Now, the other side of it is what can we be doing to better the situation? What can we be contributing? This is also what we've been discussing. Achdus contributes. Tefillah, of course. Tefillah fills both roles. And the Koyach of Torah. Those are the things that we know are the things that will push toward. And Achdus includes all the various aspects of Chesed, etc., etc. This is what we can do. And when we talk about Chesed and Achdus, realize that it's fine if it's within your own family. That's also called chesed, that's also called achdus. And that is very much contributing toward more hashuas hashchina and klal Yisrael. In terms of the pain, so there's no getting around that, yes, it is painful. And the things that I'm going to say now, I'm saying to our crowd here in this room for us to be able to deal with it. What would you say to a person who's actually, okay, that's a whole different, I wouldn't answer that off the cuff. Let's appreciate a point. And here we're going to come back to the Dor HaMidbar. There's a machlokes in the Gemara whether the Dor HaMidbar with tzaddikim or rishonim. Not only is it that, but it's mamish a very extreme machlokes. Either they have no chelek to olam haba, that's one opinion. And the other opinion in the Gemara was that they were one of the greatest generations that ever was. Go put that together. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the leaning of the conclusion of the Gemara pushes it in favor of the latter opinion, that they're one of the greatest generations that ever was. Now, open up a Bamidbar and tell me what your impression is. Problems, complaining, problems, etc., right? So this is a big subject, which we're not going to get into fully now, but I'll just make one point. Hashem, the way he puts it is, 40 shana akut bidar. right? That's from the Avim Shel Kutbado. What does that mean? That means for 40 years, so to speak, I struggled with this nation. Well, let's understand what that means. Kind of sounds like, the way Guzari puts it is, Hashem is a very good judge of character. He didn't choose the wrong people. Okay? The very fact that Hashem chose them is already the proof that don't take the complaint, the accusations against them so literally, right? Because you know, the Christians and Muslims are coming with a very straightforward taina. Basically, what's behind their claim is Hashem couldn't figure it out the first time. That's for sure, right? But then, if you think about it for a minute, he tried with them, it didn't work, and then he took the better ones, right? Look how much nachas they're giving him. So the Khazari says, Hashem got it right the first time. The very fact that he chose them is already the proof of their greatness. What was going on there? What was going on in the Midbar? What was going on in the Midbar was, and this is how the Elder of Kelm says this, and this is a perspective on all the accusations you see against Klal Yisrael and Tanakh. Tanakh is, you learn Tanakh, and you just get the impression of a lousy people they were. Right? Problems and problems and problems and problems. Just want to bring out a point. He actually learned Sefer Shoftim. These ubiquitous psukim in Sefer Shoftim that say, "Batishkota oratz harboim shana." It tells about an incident, period, and then it says, and then things were quiet for 40 years. And then it says about another thing that happened, and then it says things were quiet for 60 years. If you ever add up the numbers, it's two-thirds of the period are the times that are glossed over in that, and then things were quiet for 40 years. Now, when you learn Sefer Shoftim, you also understand that if things were quiet, that means that they were behaving exceptionally well. Because when they weren't, there were immediate responses, which already turns the whole picture of Sefer Shoftim around. The point is that what Hashem was doing with Klal Yisrael was, the way the Alter of Kelm puts it, is he was the master mechanic. He was taking a nation and putting them through, not through a castigation system, but through an old-fashioned chinuch system, which was very demanding, very harsh, and it raised them to immense levels. That is the story of the Dor HaMidbar. All right, what about all the problems? So the Khazari says, the anger of Hashem 10 times in the Midbar. And you're learning in the Torah, it goes from one to the next, 1 week to the next. Over how long of a period was that? 40 years. A nation of 600,000 between men between 20 and 60. So add the women, add above, add below. We're talking 2 to 3 million, right? It's a fair estimate. Anger Hashem 10 times in 40 years. That's a very, very good track record. But what? In Hashem's chinuch system, and that's how the Kuzari puts it. He says, "Hagadol mi shechatov sfurim." If you could say about me that I sinned 10 times, just one person, that I sinned 10 times in 40 years, you should give me kvitlach. Hagadol mi shechatov sfurim. The great person is the one who you can count his sins. They were a very great nation, and Hashem was putting them through the grind to make them greater and greater and greater. He wanted to make out of them a nation that is beyond reality in terms of what you would think a human being could be. And he achieved it. He achieved it. Now, here you have to ask the question, but how many people died in the process? How many people died in the Darwin? What's that? At the end of the day, the whole generation. If you're just looking at it piece by piece, there was a plague here, there was the snakes there, there was the right. For what purpose? To make them better. How could they become better after they were dead? What's the answer? The Gemara brings a very telling pasuk. The Gemara made a very big deal about that pasuk. And when the Gemara in the Sanhedrin concludes that they were a very great generation, the Gemara quotes the following pasuk. It says, about the Dor HaMidbar, it was said, "Isfuli chasida korse brisi alei zevach." Gather unto me, my close ones. Chasidim literally translates as the extremely dedicated ones. If we're going to give it as literal a translation, we can get the extreme devotees. Gather unto me my extreme devotees, those who formed a bris with me, which I'm going to translate that as covenant, but what does that really mean to anybody? Bris means a connection, a bond. Okay? Those who created a bond with me over a sacrifice. Okay? So again, let me say that pasuk in English. Gather unto me my extreme devotees, those who created a bond with me over a sacrifice. What does that mean? This is what Rabbi Avigdor Miller said. He said, Hashem made Klal Yisrael into the immensely great nation that it was on the backs of the Dor HaMidbar. He pushed them to heights that were beyond human ability because he knew that human beings can be something that's greater than human ability. And it was relentless. He didn't let up. It was a tough chinuch system. And many of them actually lost their lives in the process, which when you're talking about human chinuch, I hope that doesn't happen, right? But many of them lost their lives in the process. And what does Hashem say about it at the end? What Hashem says about it at the end, it's true. These people were karbanos in terms of me making Klal Yisrael, getting Klal Yisrael into what they were, what I envisioned for them. And therefore, now they're not in this world anymore. They're there. Bring those people close to me. This is my closest circles. The ones who actually served as the karbanos to bring Klal Yisrael to the levels that I wanted. The point is, and again, it's easy to say this, so let's say it, dafka because now it's easy. Everything in the physical world is a very small part of our lives. It's a tiny picture in terms of what is the story, what is the Jew's life story? Death is the end all? No, not for us. Death is often, always, is when it really starts. It really starts. And therefore, as far as we're concerned, when we talk about accomplishment, when we talk about various mediums of growth, death is on the list. We're not shy about that. It's not a fearful word. People in Klal Yisrael, for whether we're talking in terms of dying al kiddush Hashem, and also not. We're talking about people who die as people do. Old age, other things, Rahman, but this can all part of the growth system. Volbe, in his Sefer Alei Shur, where he goes through instruction for various stages of life, right? Imamiji gives instruction for a bachur in yeshiva. He gives how you relate to how you. The avoid of having children, of chinuch, of celebrating a birth, of celebrating your wedding, of marriage, etc., etc. And he has a whole chapter on death as one of the stages in life that you have to be working toward and preparing for, with the understanding that this whole business is really just a prelude. Is that how you say it? Is the opening to when life really starts.
Question, because you see, they say Hamas says we love death more than you love Jews love life. I mean, in the same hand that death is just another stage for us, we really value life.
That's right.
So
And therefore, don't anybody ever make the decision that, hey, death is an area of growth. All right, I have to choose my, no. Right? We value life because of what it does for us, because of the opportunity it provides us with. But at the same time, it's like the Chovas HaLevavos has its two sides of the coin, that we put immense value on life because every moment of life provides us with opportunities for billions of years to come. Right? And therefore, death is something that we, again, easy to say, but that we welcome when Hashem decides to send it our way. We face it with. We, I'm talking big. The picture of the Jew that we want to strive for is to be able to look it in the face and move toward it with equanimity. Again, easier said than done, but let's not talk about it in those terms right now. When we hear about throughout history, how Jews have lost their lives in the process of our history, so appreciate, was that the end of their story? It's the end of what we can see because we're still here. It's the end of what we can see because we're still here. But this is not really where it's at. This is the great preparatory stage. So, yes, there was the pain. There is the pain. And I forgot who it was that mentioned here. We have to actually be connecting to that pain. We are connecting to that pain. We're connected to the pain. While at the same time, with the realization that for the Jew, at the end of the day, it's temporal and it's all headed towards something much bigger than that. This is something we want to be hammering home to ourselves on a regular basis. You see, Michal Yehuda Lifkovich, I'll end with this. He was, if probably about 10 years ago, one of the Gedolim of Bnei Brak, who I had the schus of having a connection with as a bacher here in Eretz Yisrael. Mamish, another one of those, what was left from the old school. Mamish was like encountering an angelic person. I know that sounds poetic, but that was Mamish what it was like. He left a tzava'a. He left a will, meaning instructions as to what he wanted at the end of his life. And he requested there that if at all possible, he doesn't want to be sedated when he's at the end of his life. And he described why. And this is something that, just to see how, if we can bring this home to ourselves. He said that there's a Zohar that describes the unbelievable bliss of the moment that a person leaves his body and is met by the Shekhinah and is welcomed into the Shekhinah's embrace, into the fold of the Shekhinah's embrace. The Zohar describes the unbelievable bliss of that moment. And Rabbi Chiyuda said, I want to be focused on that moment and not be caught by surprise so that I can go into it actively. I can go into it actively. The clarity with which he saw beforehand as moving into that next stage. Now, again, I want to come back and say, we glorify life. We view life as the great opportunity, but it's certainly with the understanding that as we value life to the umpteenth degree, with the understanding that the next stage is where it really starts. And the way the Chovas HaLevavos puts it is in his famous mashal back in Shavuot Yisrael the King, is that the person who's living with that absolute clarity is constantly living with mixed feelings. Because he's actually looking forward to it, while at the same time, he wants another day and another day and another day, because every day that he has here, he can make it that much better. So if you ask him, do you want to go there? He's anticipating it. But at the same time, he'll say, no, give me another week. Okay, these are just trying to, like you said before, trying to bring home the basics, trying to bring home the basics. The more we can be mechazik ourselves in these things, the more we really will set it up such that the karbonis who went did achieve that. They achieved, like we said about the Dor HaMidbar, of bringing Klal Yisrael to that better place. And let's appreciate that point also, that in this sense, it's actually now a hint. A person is killed as a Kaddish, goes up to Shemayim. So what's his state? None of us know. None of us know. But what we do know is that the more he accomplished in his death, the greater of a place he's going to be. How much did each of those people accomplish in their death?
Depends on
That's the point. To a large extent, that actually depends on us. Because if I become that much of a greater person, if I become that much closer to Hashem as a result of what happened, then these people, Hashem says, oh, 1 minute. We have to, Reb Chaim Volozhiner says that that's din v'cheshbon. This din, at the time of a person's death, Hashem says, okay, here's the story. And then a month later, Hashem might come back and say, wait, there's a whole different picture now. That's in our hands. So we're contributing not just to the actual effort, but we're actually contributing to to when that karbon come to Hashem and say, look what I made out of your people. Look what I made out of Yidden. And don't underestimate the value of one Jew who can be attributed to that person's credit. And Kol Shekein, if it's more than that, we should be zeichet to hear the Seiros Tov has been heira.
What do you get from a person who says, if you're an Amnus car, why would the
Ah.
That is the one.
The
Why
question,
would the
Mr. Shvei is asking, the person who comes and says, if If you are the chosen people, why is all this happening? So what do we answer him? Probably nothing. But the big question is, what do we answer ourselves? And you know what? I think you've just given me the subject for next week. Bli neder, I hope I remember. Maybe you'll remind me.
Okay.
We'll open next week with this question
The whole
because it's
world
a big
faced
question.
us. We're not with cloud. How do you explain it to me?
So the truth is, I'm really, there was another point that came up to talk about the rise of anti-Semitism and the whole phenomenon. And you know what? It always was. It's not changing. And it's actually a reflection of the fact that we are not in the same plane as the rest of the world. You know what?
Thanks.
Let's do that next week. After, you know, from the other side of the fence, Be'ezus Hashem, from the other side of the fence, looking back at history where there used to be anti-Semitism and explained why it was. Yeah, exactly. To put it into simple English, an Ilui Neshama. Yes. Yes.
Thousands of soldiers are sitting on the floor in the